sinker and a line. I said, fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
With the cough, the groan, and the creaking joints, that must mean Fish and Frank is here. And RJ up there in the golden chrome towers of power. Be as it may, we are here, we are doing stuff, and we are thinking about fishing, world problems, and, you know, I didn't really get angry at all the stuff going on in the world.
You didn't?
Until I put gas in my boat the other day.
Oh, God, no.
And I officially hate anybody who voted Democrat.
Well, I had to fill up the van yesterday, and that scared me to death.
I was like, you know, I don't really care, Republican, Democrat, whatever. I think they're both idiots. I'm an independent. But that was the first time I actually got mad.
Yeah.
I mean, when I looked at the bill, and I only put a little bit of gas in the boat compared to what it holds, my year and a half endeavor is, we actually took a test ride on it, and you think it's 41 foot, you're 12, 13 feet off the water, sitting in the flying bridge, or whatever it is up there, but it's up there, and you would just think how terrifying that would be to do 40 miles an hour in a big boat. And it was like doing 10, 12, 15 miles an hour. Literally, there's no bumps, you know, feel much. It's just, well, we thought, oh man, with this boat, you know, you're going to want to go really slow all the time because it's going to be so much, you know. Terry says, how are you ever going to go slow in this boat?
Yeah, is that the hull? Is it the hull that's making it perform like that?
Part the hull and part the size of the boat, because once you start forcing a boat that big through the water, and Vanderbilt Yachts, who made these boats, put a big keel on the bottom. Now, the great part is it sticks the water like you can't imagine. It's so smooth and so steady. It's awesome. But because of the keel, if you're doing close to 40 miles an hour and you turn that wheel hard, that boat will whip around like a jet ski.
Wow.
The back will be in the front, just like that. Just
yeah, and
like
everything that on the counters will be out the windows.
Well, yeah, it'll slingshot you right around. I mean, but you can feel it before it breaks loose. And even in my small boat, I don't try and make a hard right turn at, you know, 40 miles an hour or so. But it was just really weird. And Morris, I was talking to him, and he said, well, that's a sign of a really good boat, that it's what it's supposed to do. Once you put the throttles to it, it should just smooth out and just go. So, well, for me, it was a really weird sensation. And people say, well, did you like it? Was it better or worse? I said, I don't know. I couldn't process it. You know? I couldn't figure out what the heck to do. But I ended up having to put power steering on it. So anyway, that's the last little bit. Next week, this time, it'll be at the house. Hopefully, it'll either be before or after the show. But anyway, so my year and plus endeavor of getting us a mobile vacation home fishing thing is almost to the end. But fishing out there is actually pretty good right now. It's been a really weird, since January 1st till now. I mean, forget about last year. I mean, that was, we keep saying, boy, these years are weird. But we had an awesome year this year because the harbor, while we didn't have an exceptionally cold winter, it was not exceptionally hot. And so the water temp in the harbor and the Gulf all kind of equalized. There was very little rain, so we had a tremendous growth of seagrass. We had a lot of squid came into the harbor, which happens very seldom. It was just an amazing year, and it continuing to be pretty darn good. We've got big trout out pretty much off of Mangrove Point or Whorehouse, however you want to call it. Fair numbers in Cape Hayes, up Bull Bay. We've got decent trout fishing down in Pine Island Sound. It's been really surprising. We've got some actually pretty good-sized trout. The numbers are still a little low, but the quality of the fish is actually very good, which bodes well for the upcoming, because those are the ones, you know, who are doing the spawning. And so I'm pretty pleased with the trout figures the way they are. Redfish continues to be a little light without the numbers we're used to in Charlotte Harbor. But when you say, geez, we're used to having these numbers of redfish, now we got to talk about what decade you're talking about.
Right, exactly. Don't talk to one of the old timers.
Well, if you were fishing here in the late 80s, early 90s, there was no redfish. There was none. You could fish for a month or two and never see a redfish. And guys who actually knew how to fish and catch redfish, they were just gone. And it took several years for that to come back. And around 2000, 2001, we had some of the best years of fishing I've ever seen in my life. Then it kind of dipped. Now it's kind of coming back up again. So it just depends on what decade you're talking about. 1971, 72, it was the worst years to fish in Charlotte Harbor. Everything was dead. So, you know, you got to take what year are we talking about. 2019 versus 2000, 2000 was way better. But 2019 versus 1992, 2019 was way better. You know, it's just trying to make sure. You ever notice today, everything it's either good or bad.
It just be average? This is how it should be or could be?
Or just different.
Yeah, or just different.
Or just different, you know.
And I think a lot of people don't get it, that the oceans and the rivers and the lakes are cyclic. You know, they go up, they go down, they're always coming back into balance somewhere.
Now, you always tell me I'm fairly sick. Is that the same thing?
Similar, yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. But theirs goes round and round.
Round and round, yeah.
Like
a big wheel. It goes round and round instead of flatlining, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why some years you got more than others. And, you know, you remember back then when we had that horrible freeze and all the snook died, all the yearling snook died. I forget what year that was. And for a couple of years after that, there were no snook.
It kind of goes on and on. No matter what you do, it's a little crazy. But the nice part about it is we're having a great mackerel year.
Yes, there are mackerel everywhere. They're catching mackerel at the Eljo Bean Bridge. What are those guys doing up there? I mean,
it's one of those years, but the rains have just started, remember. So the water flow coming down out of the river is just getting going. So the harbor still isn't brown yet. It's getting a light tint, but it's still not brown yet. So the mackerel don't know if they're in the Gulf or in the harbor or where. They're just chasing a lot of. There's still some of the squid out there. There's a lot of glass minnows, anchovies, fair amount of other bait fish out there. So there's plenty of food, so they're going to hang out until the water gets too fresh, and then they're going to start pushing back to the Gulf. But
I was talking to one of the guys on the bridge, and I said, what have you been catching the mackerel on? And remember we had this conversation months ago. He said, I got these red and white soda straws, and I cut them into three pieces, and I thread the line through with a treble hook on the end. He says, and I'm nailing them.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I do if I'm on a pier or something is I take a bass fishing bullet weight. It's a lead weight with a pointed nose. It looks like the front of a bullet.
Yeah.
And I'll take the straw, and I usually cut it down to, if you got a full straw, it's what, about 8 inches long?
Yeah, something about like that, yeah.
So I'm going to cut it in half, and then I'm going to go to one end of it. I'm going to take a scissors and cut 12 to 6 o'clock and then 3 to 4 o'clock. Not cutting that off, but making a skirt.
Oh, yeah.
So what I'm doing is cutting from the top to the bottom. I'm not cutting it off. I'm just cutting the straw in half, leaving the end attached. And then you turn the scissors sideways and go from 3 to 9 o'clock, and you cut again. Now that gives you four kind of flares of a skirt. And I've tried cutting them smaller to get, instead of just four tabs on the skirt, get like eight. I usually end up breaking some of that off. And so if you're really good enough to do it, you got a very sharp scissors, you can accomplish that. But once you make that fan cut on the bottom, cutting top and sideways. Then you put that end, you make a leader, you tie your treble hook on a little steel leader, or you can simply use one of the pre-made ones and put the treble hook on a clip, and over the swivel end, slide that straw down so that the slits you made in the straw fit over the treble hook. Now, to make it actually work and not crush the straw, sometimes you can take, if you're using a quarter ounce bullet weight, you can slide that down and it'll stick on the top of the straw. But if I need something a little bit heavier, I take a tiny little split shot and put it onto the leader right at the top of the straw and pinch it down good with my pliers. And then I can set the bullet weight where that little split shot holds the bullet weight in place. The only problem is you can't put the bullet weight on if you have a swivel on. So this is kind of comes to the point where you want to make these leaders yourself. Put the treble hook on the end, put a crimp on it. I'm usually using 20 to 30 pound steel because it's just going to last until it rots apart. And then put your straw on so it goes over the treble hook. And then I'll put the tiny split shot on, pinch it on, and drop my bullet weight on, and then I put the swivel on the other end. Now, the whole thing only needs to be about 10 inches long. And the only reason for 10 inches, it can be 6, 8 inches, just easier to work with a little bit bigger piece of steel. Now, they're great to make out of single strand steel, but I find myself grabbing it with my fingers. I want to take my hand and grab that leader and lift it up. And what happens is you get cut a lot. Single strand is not great with skin. So if I make them out of single strand, I'm going to put some 50-pound monofilament leader, about a foot, foot and a half of it, from the swivel on that little steel leader up to another swivel, tie it to my line. And what that is something I can grab a hold of, because braid is really tough on your fingers, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a little handle to get the fish up. But this old straw trick goes back to years ago. McDonald's had the best colors.
Which was what, red and white, right?
No, yellow.
Yellow.
Remember they used to
That's right. That's right. They were yellow. The
and
McDonald's
I don't remember
colors.
If they had a little blue in there, but yeah. I know red and yellow. And whatever the tones were, but it was white, red, and yellow. I don't remember if it was blue on, but I think white, red, and yellow.
Yeah, I think it was the McDonald's colors.
Yeah, when they had all the cartoons and
yeah,
all that
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly,
you know? And,
right.
But yeah, red and yellow and white. And man, the local McDonald's used to put the straws behind the counter because everybody started coming in and grabbing straws.
Yeah, a big handful and going home, yeah.
So they made you buy a drink yeah. to get a straw. So, but that was how we did it back then. It really worked.
So as you're pulling the straw through the water, there's got to be something going on with the water going through the straw and coming out the other end. There's got to be some kind of cavitation or bubbles or
and that's why
something
when I'm
going
doing
on.
That split shot,
yeah.
it keeps the sinker a little, in front of the straw. Mm-hmm. So you got an opening there. And it could produce a bubble trail, I don't know. I mean, but it works.
No, if you take a silver minnow or a silver spoon or something like that, and you fish against a guy using a straw, you're going to lose every time.
It's funny because it's true.
And I can't imagine what it looks like to the mackerel, but whatever it is, the mackerel wants to eat it. Now, does it look like a squid, maybe? I don't know.
Well, there's all kinds of stuff and swimming around in the water.
Yeah, we'll have to ask a mackerel what he thinks it is. But
yeah, it's crazy. My thought on the mackerel is, so people automatically assume Spanish. That's when you say mackerel here, we automatically assume Spanish mackerel. Now, we've had kings hitting in the harbor, not huge ones, but big ones, you know, compared to what a normal Spanish would be. And we've had a lot of Cyril mackerel. Now, Spanish mackerel is good eating. If you eat it the same day, you know, put it in the grill, brown on both sides, done, wonderful food. Once you freeze it, it gets way worse. But same day mackerel, that's awesome meal. And king mackerel, are very nice meal. That, you know, I like to flay them out as soon as possible, but if I'm on the boat, I don't normally bleed fish cutting them. I usually take the fish, and if I'm going out and I'm going to get kings, I have an ice chest, and I have ice in it and a little bit of water, and I take the live fish and put them in that ice water bath. What happens is they die of hypothermia. And with the hypothermia, it draws the blood away from the muscles, the meat of the fish, and brings it to the heart, the brains, the lungs. So it actually works better than bleeding them. The meat ends up actually cleaner. But I've done both ways in king mackerel because I like my fish milder flavors. I enjoy the taste of the fish, but not the fishy overtones. So the only problem I have is with cereal mackerel. It's got the dots, not the lines. And they're just awful.
Now, I heard from one of the old-timers in El Joe Bean, because, you know, those guys will eat anything. They said you got to pickle cereal mackerel. You can't cook them. You can't fry them. You can't bake them. But if you cut them up into chunks and you put them into a thick brine and vinegar and pickle them, he said they're actually pretty good.
Yeah, because they taste like the vinegar.
Right. But they don't get as mushy.
That's how they did Northern Pike.
They cut it up into pieces
with onions, cucumbers, vinegar, all this stuff in there. And you take the fish out, and it could have been turkey, fish, whatever. It tastes like vinegar, cucumbers, and onions, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I think what he was trying to tell me was that it's not as mushy when you, it doesn't turn to jello when you go, when you cook it, it gets like jello. It's like paste. It's horrible.
Cereal mackerel are just god awful.
Right. When you pickle them, though, the meat stays pretty firm, so it stays as chunks. Yeah. So I got to try that sometime.
It might be a decent fish to smoke. Because a lot of those
fish suck
for just table fare, and they're just god awful. When you smoke them, and the thing about a cereal mackerel, it doesn't have the heavy bloodline in it.
Yeah,
that's why I hate smoked mullet. I think it's god awful nasty stuff because you have that horrible bloodline in it, and the white parts of the meat are awesome, but then you're always getting that bloodline in it, and that's just gross. But cereal don't have that. It's a consistent nasty all the way through it. So that might be one, especially for some of the spicier smoking things, you know, where they put a lot more of the stuff on it.
Right, and smoking dries the fish out. And that's the problem with cereal, I think, is that it's got that nasty, gooey, whenever you go to cook it, it turns into a jello paste, some kind of nasty stuff.
Yeah, God, they're awful.
Yeah, but doing it, probably smoking it, that might not be bad. Smoke them and they're going to dry out.
Because like Jack Crevel, it's just not worth flaying. There's not enough meat for the work you do to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're trying to get the meat off the skin, you're losing even more. I wouldn't kill a fish for that much meat.
Yeah.
It's just, you got to be a special kind of, you know, you're the same person, kills a fish for that much meat, you go out and kick puppies, you know. look at that puppy kick, you know. That's the kind of person you are. If you're going to kill a fish, put all that work and everything else for a mediocre piece of meat that's not even big enough to deal with. But on a smoker, because it stays with the skin, if you take your time, you can actually get enough meat to... Jacks are amazing on a smoker. That's why I was thinking about the cereal mackerel, because Jack is not a good flavor, but smoked, that extra fishiness, it's good with the smoking and all the, you know, they put the ashes on it and the whole bit, you know, all the spices. I don't have a smoker.
Yeah, that's something we need to build, Frank, is build a smoker.
Yeah, years ago, I did smoke fish and all that kind of stuff, and it was pretty good. But the thing I never get is somebody gives me, oh, here's smoked swordfish, here's smoked cobia. And I'm like, well, what is it? Well, this is the, and they got to look at the package, because once you smoke it, it kind of, very subtle flavor profile differences. Mm-hmm. You know, it pretty much tastes like smoked meat. And my palate, though, what I've been smoking since I was 12 and I'm 64, so that's quite a while. I don't have a lot of taste sensors left, which is a wonderful service if I'm eating at, like, chain restaurants, Chili's, Olive Garden, and all these, because when I quit smoking a number of years ago, I quit for like 9 years, I could not eat at a fast food joint. I am not a big fan of salt. And when you eat these chain store burgers and foods and everything, breakfast sandwiches, it's like eating pure salt. How people who don't smoke can even stand to put that in their mouth, I have no idea at all.
Would you like a little egg with your salt?
Yeah, no, they don't even bother to put egg in it. They just put salt in. They put yellow salt on top of that.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, everybody always told me, oh, when you quit smoking, food's going to taste so much better. Liars.
Yeah.
It's horrible because the food now sucks. You know, I was trying to compare it to when I was a kid, you know, the food, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go back to these wonderful flavors. No, it all sucks. It's like, the biggest thing going around right now is food shortages.
Yeah.
We are going to be short food. We're going to be short this, short that.
Yeah, the big bread shortage is coming.
Yeah, but I don't understand it because we're a wheat exporter. If we just don't export, we got...
You would think that that would be a good idea, but...
But the thing is we export enough to feed half the rest of the world.
Well, here's a problem, Frank. We'll talk about finance here for a minute. Wheat, oil, corn, soybeans... They're commodities, and
right.
They sell futures on them. And the futures sometimes go out as far, depending on the item, is go out as far as 5 years on a future. So if we've got all this wheat that we're going to produce this winter, all this winter wheat,
right.
It was probably sold a couple of years ago. And there's a contract, so it's going to go. There's no way to protect ourselves instantly from a shortage.
Yeah, Joe Biden has... 3 times since he's been in office, invoke the Defense Production Act.
Yes, which is telling you to go out and make more, right?
Yeah, 3 times now he's invoked the Defense Production Act. So all he has to do is do the same thing and say, listen, you know, that can't be exported. We need that for the national defense. What's a 4th time? He's already done it 3 times. Why can't you just do it again? You know, I'm not... That wasn't a slam or a dig or a praise or whatever. That was just simply a question, you know, unless something. But I always just think it's funny. We produce our own food here. What's ridiculous about the U.S. is a vast majority of our food gets shipped to China and a couple other countries, processed, and shipped back here
chicken.
For sale.
Chicken. They do that with chicken.
They do it with beef. They do it with corn and vegetables. And
well, you know, chicken doesn't really keep, you know. They got to freeze it, right? They kill the chickens. They throw the bodies in the deep freeze. They put them on a boat. They ship them to China. They have to unfreeze them. Then they got to process them, cut them into breasts and legs and wings and blah, blah. Then they got to freeze them again to get them back over here.
Yep.
And then we thaw them out and put them in the supermarket. And
fresh.
when you bring it home, and it lasts about 2 days in the refrigerator if you don't cook it.
So. I don't get it. It's a great time to learn to fish. But
yeah, see, you guys didn't know we were going to go back to fishing, but here we are, right back to fishing.
My only thing is, if you honestly believe that Walmart, Target, Publix, Winn-Dixie, and the whole list of these people are all going to go out of business because there's no food, guess again. That includes McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, Taco Bell, Subway, every Outback, Olive Garden. Think about the billions of dollars of people who have already bought up food for several years. So when you go in a grocery store, chances are no, you're not going to find, you want Hunt's ketchup. You might have to get McCormick's ketchup. Or, you know, whatever the name of this stuff is. But chances are, if you just not too picky, you're going to... I honestly don't believe it makes great internet hype and clicks, but that you're going to starve to death because you cannot obtain food. Maybe it's not the food you like, but it's, this is where you go back to fishing. I have very little sympathy for people who go out and they catch 30 fish during the day and come back and complain because they're not the right fish. They wanted trout and all they caught was ladyfish, or they wanted snook and what they caught was redfish. You know what I mean? Or I didn't catch what I wanted because I wanted to fillet 10 sheephead and I only caught, you know, if you're not catching fish, I am all in on helping. I will do anything I can to help you catch fish. But if you're getting down to the point where you have to be a specific fish, I'm going to give you to one of the other guys.
Right, right.
You know, oh, I'm going out. How are you doing? Oh, man, we're catching fish every day. But I don't like those fish. I want to catch that fish.
Well, also in catching fish, you can support the neighborhood. And I remember back in the late 50s, early 60s, Grandpa and his buddies, they'd go twice a year to Port Judith, Rhode Island, and they'd charter a boat. And they were either going for bluefish if it was in the fall or if it was in the spring.
Those are ones for the neighbors they didn't like, right?
Right, right. Well, but back then, you know, the Italians and the Irish and all the rest of them, they'd cook anything. It didn't matter. And then they would go for cod, and they'd catch cod.
That's good.
Yeah, they'd catch cod and a few other. And they would come back, you know, in the pickup truck with these tons of fish, because they would catch a ton when they went out there. And the neighbors would come with their little wheelbarrows and buckets and things like that, and then the men would be doling them out to people, and the neighborhood would smell like cooking fish for about a month.
Well, smelt. Smelt is a very small fish, like an anchovy.
Yes.
And they run in huge schools in the creeks and rivers and stuff, at least they used to. And the guys would go out there and net them up and put them in garbage cans. And they would fill up a 30-gallon garbage can with these things. Now, that takes a lot of these things. And they don't freeze. I mean, you really want to catch them. And then when you get them, you got to kind of, if you're good with it, you can use your thumb to gut them with, you know, and pop them open. But a lot of times you got to use a knife to slit them, take the guts out, rinse them. And then they put them in a beer batter and fry the whole thing up. But the big parties and when the carnival would come to town and people would have big, you know, 4th of July parties and all that. And in the fall, you have other festivals and parties. But I think they ran either in the spring or the fall, but huge parties with smelt on the menu. And there would just be trays and trays of them out there. It's crazy. Similar thing, because we didn't, if you live in the Midwest, you didn't go to the coast to go fishing. You went on Lake Michigan and usually came back empty-handed.
Mm. But, you know, here we live on Charlotte Harbor. Right now, Frank Wright, there's cobia are still here, right?
Still doing very good on cobia. The hard thing I have about talking about cobia is they swim around markers, they swim around the the concrete posts at the ends of the reef. There's a lot of them out there, but it's very hard to target a cobia. And you've got to catch them on lures, honestly, if I was going to go out and do it right now and get back into cobia fishing, my first day, 2 days, 3 days, I would luck into some fish. After a few days, getting my technique back, learning to count my lures down, work them back to me, I would be able to increase, double my numbers in a few days. But it would take me a few days of practicing, getting the technique back, getting it dialed in again. It's not a fish that, like with a snook, you get the bait up underneath the mangroves, work it back out slowly. Chances are, you do that several times, you're going to catch a snook or even a redfish. With a cobia, you can throw lures at them, you could do this and that, and unless it's the way they want it, they don't eat it. They don't move away. They don't run much, but they don't do much else.
Yeah, and the other thing they'll do just to annoy the crap out of you is to follow it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and every now and then, speed up, slow down, speed up, slow down, drive you crazy.
And exactly as you say, most of the time, if they're going to follow a lure, they're probably curious, but they're not going to eat it. If you got cobia following your lure, you get two follows, change the lure. They're not going to eat it. They're going to follow the heck out of it. Hey, what's that? Okay, look at here. Oh my God.
Here it comes again. Let's go watch it.
Let's go watch it. Isn't that cool? Look at it. It's pretty. Don't look like food. They're not interested.
Yeah, so, and it doesn't look like the food that they're eating at the moment. It's tough, too.
Here's the thing. You got to change the lure, but you got to keep it. If whatever you're throwing is just under the surface, what you put on next has to be at that same basic depth. If you're going from a lure that goes 10 inches deep to a lure that goes 3 or 4 feet deep, you're probably not going to catch them. You got to find something else in that range, different shape, different sound as you bring it through the water, but that's where they were. That's where their attention was. So when you change out, you got to change the look and the sound, but you can't change the depth and the speed because that's what they wanted. They just didn't want that one, so you got to find which one of the same thing but different. That's the hard part. Talk about mackerel, a little bit about trout. Tarpon's a big thing in the harbor.
Everybody is talking about tarpon. They're like stacked up all over the place.
And, you know, truthfully, a tarpon is not that much more difficult to catch than a snook, ladyfish, jacks. You know, if you're there and they're there and you present the bait the way they like it, they're probably going to eat it. They're an amazing fish once they're on the end of the line. But while they're just swimming around, it's another fish. And it's hard to figure them out. And just this minute, I was thinking, you know, we'd throw these itty-bitty tiny baits, inch-and-a-half, two-inch baits at them in the canals, right? Because that's what they prefer to eat on. And, you know, the DOA tiny terrorized, the smallest of the storm swim shads, the little tiny, tiny storm swim shads. I actually throw bigger lures for snook, even 18, 20-inch snook, than I do for, you know, 18-inch to 48-inch tarpon. I throw smaller baits for them than I do for, you know, 20-inch snook. But just thinking about it, a DOA bait buster is the number one tarpon lure ever. DOA bait buster. Like Ghostbusters, but bait buster. Now, it's only four to 5 inches long, and we're throwing it at 6-foot fish. Kind of goes back to what we were doing in the canals with these tarpon that are 3 and 4 foot long, and we're throwing an inch and a half, 2-inch lure at them. Literally, when the tarpon double their size, we're only doubling the size of that little lure. I never thought about that till just this minute.
I'll write that down.
But that's true, isn't it?
It is.
And because we got a lot of big lures for tarpon, you've got the Rapala subwalks. They've got a great size, works awesome on tarpon. The guys who have the muscle stamina to work that lure for tarpon, God bless you. You're going to catch a lot of fish with it, but it takes some muscle and effort, stamina. But that DOA baitbuster, 4 or 5 inches long versus a 6-foot fish, is kind of the same as a 2-inch fish that's only 3 to 4 foot long.
Yeah, I'm going to guess the size is relative to the fish. You know, when he was 2 feet long, the lure was a certain size. So he's got this ratio of the size he's looking at that he's used to eating. Now he's 6 feet long, and you can make the lure bigger, but stay within that proportion.
I'm going to actually have to tell Robert that.
Yeah, we're going to have to try that out.
Well, I know it works because the smallest storm swim shad is the number one tarpon lure, and the DOA bait buster is the number one open water tarpon lure. The storm swim shad, the little tiny one, is canal tarpon. You know, canal, creek, river stuff. But in the harbor and in the that, it's the DOA bait buster. And I always just thought, well, you throw bigger lures at them when you get out in the harbor. Never broke it down in my head before that, you know. And I know you guys get bored with me doing this, but it...
If it helps you catch a fish, it's worth the effort.
It's not even if it helps you catch a fish or not. It's every once in a while you get that, the light bulb goes off. I'll be talking to a customer and talking about grouper fishing. We'll talk about the different rigs, and I'll show them how to build something. And you see the light go off, and you know he's got it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They understand. They're actually going to, because you spent that time with them, they're going to go out and catch more fish. They're going to be much more consistent. They're going to get it. And, you know, I talk to other people, buoys in the Gulf, this, that, next thing. And you can see they're glazed over. They don't give a rat's butt what you're talking about, because to them it's unrelevant and unimportant, even though you're trying to let them know this is the most important thing I can tell you. Because if you understand something, you're liable to be able to accomplish it. But if you don't know anything about what you're doing, how are you going to accomplish that? Outside of sheer dumb luck, it ain't going to happen. And it's the same thing with tarpon. It's an insight as to size, relative food size. It's a huge insight. Never, you know, so it's one of the things that I try and do that to help people catch fish. A guy come in, he wanted to know why he couldn't catch snook. And so we talked about some of the stuff he's doing. I grabbed the rod and reel, went out in the parking lot, and said, show me how to cast. And he's literally throwing overhand at the mangroves. He's not trying to skip a stone and get under the trees where the fish are. He's fishing 5-6 feet out from the mangroves because he's afraid of getting snagged up. Well, it's called damn it fishing for a reason, because either damn it's a good cast or damn it, I'm in the trees. That's just how you fish there. But you have to be willing to get snagged in order to get close enough to the fish. Because if they're 6 to 10 feet under the mangrove branches and you're 4 feet out, you're not even close to that fish with your bait.
Right, and the fish probably can't see that far.
They wouldn't have no idea that bait or that lure was there. You know, it might as well be in the next, a mile over. But if you're within a couple feet of them when the bait stops, he's going to notice it. You know, put a firecracker off 4 houses down. Oh, what was that? Put one off in my front yard? Yeah, you got my attention.
Right, and just the biology side of it, fish don't have very good long-distance vision. And a lot of it has to do with the water and light refraction and stuff. And if you spearfish, especially if you're using a pole with the rubber band on it, you got to be able to get close to the fish. And that's why the pole is as long as it is.
Yeah.
Because they can't see you until you get to a certain distance from them. Otherwise, you're just another blur in the water. So same thing with the snook. If you're tossing it six feet away from the mangroves, and he's 6 feet under the mangroves, other than the plop, he has no idea what it is. And he's not going to go out and take a look at it. You know, oh, I heard a plop. Let me swim out and make sure there's no sharks around and see if I can grab that bait. So that ain't going to happen.
That's like going into a bad neighborhood and hearing somebody breaking into something and going out unarmed to see what it is.
Yes. Yeah, exactly right.
It is. Not good. A lot of crazy stuff. Did I tell you I've been watching a lot of these end-of-the-world movies, you know, post-apocalypse stuff?
Oh, like zombie apocalypse and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, end-of-the-world, okay. Yeah, yeah. Plague, radiation, yeah, nuclear yeah. war, alien abduction, whatever it was. You know, the rapture's a big one I found out on the internet. All of a sudden, everybody just disappears. I saw people floating up into the air. What is amazing to me is the difference what people think nowadays. Our age people, if you have an end-of-the-world scenario, you get together in a group, you decide who can come in your group, who can't come in your group, right? But with these young people making these videos, in the video, if they see another person, they bring out the rifle, put scope on them, and shoot them. Just because they saw that person. They never went up and said, hey, are you a good person, bad person? Would you like to share rations? Nope, that person might have something I want. So they sit 100 yards off and pop them in the head. It is the most disturbing thing you've ever seen. And if they see somebody in a town, they wait behind a corner and hit them with a bat. They shoot them, whatever. Don't talk to them. Don't say, hey, how you doing? Do you want to, you know, you want to team up? Let's get together. You see somebody, you kill somebody. I was like, are you freaking kidding me? I like the zombie movies. I like, Star Trek, Star Wars. I like, you know, all this nonsense stuff. But I couldn't believe it when I'm looking at these, and every young person making a end-of-the-world video, you see somebody, you kill them. You don't talk to them. You don't do anything. You hang out by yourself or with the person you started with, but everybody else has to die. Young people are screwed up. They're really bad.
Well, are young people fishing? Are you seeing a lot of young people coming into the store to learn how to fish?
We're very lucky because people want to talk about the way the world works. It has worked. Was the baby boomers came out, largest generation ever, best work ethic, most productive generation in history. Now, I'm not just talking about the U.S. I'm talking about the U.S., Canada, China, Russia, all over the world. After World War II, every nation on the planet had a massive baby boom. And this is the part you liberals won't like. It was because the U.S. military. We controlled the oceans, the air, the water. We made safe passage for anybody to do business anywhere they wanted without having to have their own armed guards with them. It wasn't until the U.S. lost interest that pirates in Somalia and stuff started showing up because the U.S. just said, we don't care anymore. But while the U.S. controlled the world, it was fair and level trade all across the planet for everybody. So people had a lot of kids, biggest generation in the history of the world. Well, we're all dying off or retiring, and then you have Generation X, which is about two-thirds the size of the boomer, I think, and then the millennials, which is more than two-thirds of the baby boomers, a lot of people, a lot of millennials, but 10% of the millennials are smarter, better, work harder, have bigger brains, better worth than any children ever born in the history of the world. 40% of the millennials are as good as, work as hard, do as well, maybe even a little better than any generation in the world. Problem is, that leaves the other 50%.
Is it 50%?
So we're going from the biggest generation in the history of the planet to literally 40% of the workforce. People say, well, when this unemployment thing gets better, well, half of these kids don't want to work, and even if they do come to work, they want their trophy for showing up. I came to the soccer game, I get a trophy. Now, literally half of them are not like that. They're amazing young people. But we're expecting 40% of the millennials to take 100% of the jobs from the boomers. Why are these places going to robots? Who else is going to do the job? The only thing I don't want to see is a robotic fishing rod.
Oh, my.
You ever see these futuristic things where they throw it out and the lure's got like a laser beam, like a tractor beam, where they're bringing it back with that? I'm not into it. I still think fishing should be done with just a rod and reel.
I agree.
You think so?
I agree. Because that's half the fun, is the manipulation of the rod and reel. I remember going fishing many years ago, and I think it was tile fish that we were, and they're down deep, you know, 500, 600, 700 feet. And so you have an electric reel. And I'm telling you, it was no fun.
No.
You hit the button and you reel them in.
And you know what else I don't like? Now, I put them on my boat for when I'm out in the Gulf because of the price of fuel.
Right.
I mean, I'm not kidding. I'm looking at the price of gas going up. I went ahead and bought the, you know, the best dual beam side scan. Give me pictures of the fish on the bottom machines I could get. But I don't like that. I've never, until the boat I'm getting now, I've never had any of that garbage on my boat. I've had standard depth finders, and, you know, I could kind of tell maybe it was a school of bait or fish or whatever. Mm. But there's a point where that's just cheating, literally just cheating. Because I could, if I ran my boat through the canals going slow, I could see where there's black drum on this part of the canal, where the snook are, where the redfish are. I get outlines of the fish. Yeah. I just, give me an old rod and reel and let me go work for it. I like the challenge of finding the fish, figuring out where to go, what to do, how to do it, learning a new area. And the electronics are cool, but boy, that's cheating.
Well, and again, we come back to the reason you fish here, right? We're not commercial fishermen. We're recreational fishermen.
Now, this summer, we're going to have massive food shortages, and the whole world's going to end. So this summer, you're going to have to fish for food. But for right now, we can just do it.
Right now, have a good time doing it. So
right now, we just fun times.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you learn how to cast. You learn about terminal tackle. You learn about lures and how they work. And you learn about fish and what they eat. And, you know, just a little bit, we talked about cobia in the beginning. If you're going to change up the lure, you got to put it back in the same place because that fish is hunting at that depth. He's not hunting below that or above that. That's the depth he's hunting at. That's part of the fun of all of this is figuring it out. It's not just hooking a fish and bringing him in.
That's what I tell the guys. I said, for me, Charlotte Harbor's like my wife. I know her well. I don't
want to replace
her.
Wait a minute. Should I turn the broadcast off?
No, but I don't want to replace her. You know, I love that she's the only person in the world I will spend time with. But when you move to Charlotte County and you get to go out to Charlotte Harbor, it's a brand new girlfriend. Every time you go around the corner, there's a new experience.
Yes.
There's something
that's
else
very
to learn.
True.
There's all this stuff. It's a very exciting time. With me and the wife, we're very comfortable with each other. We know what to do, and, you know, we've kind of got the thing down pat. But when you learn Charlotte Harbor, learning what rod and reel, had a guy in the other day. He says, I can't cast. I said, well, how wide's your canal? He said, 60 feet. I said, you should easily get across that. And he's telling me about it. I said, bud, you got to bring the rod and reel in. You know, they kicked me out of the Psychic Friends Network because I can't guess worth a darn. I mean, they just flat said, no, you cannot belong to the Psychic Friends Network anymore. So, you know, he had really horrible line on it. The rod was okay. The reel was a little better than the rod. But the line was garbage. And, well, I bought that and it's braid. Sorry, bud, it's garbage. I said, let's just try something. I spooled it up, did everything the way I wanted to do it. Put the rod rail back together, little adjustment. Went out, threw it, and he went. Because I said, no. He said, well, what do I owe you? I says, let's go to the parking lot first. He threw it, 70, 80-foot cast, no problem. He was rushing into the store to pay for his modifications.
Yeah, I love it.
But it's just the learning is the fun part. Where the hard part is when people get beliefs. This is what I should do. This is the best way to do it. You're going to be screwed. Get a good idea on what you should do and be able to change that idea into something better. And that's the way it works. And there's so much fun to be had out here. We have freshwater fishing here, inshore saltwater fishing, out in the Gulf, deep water saltwater fishing. You've got offshore, inshore, deep water, shallow water, freshwater. I mean, you name it. There's not a type of fishing around here that, I mean, outside of certain species of fish that are only cold water, everything else is here. It's amazing.
And, you know, you could pull up into a parking lot like in Walmart that's got a little canal in the back, and you can go back there and catch a fish.
What's really crazy is that some of the best fishing, Northport, up until this last winter when we had that real cold week or two, had some of the best peacock bass fishing in the state.
Yeah.
There was the lake over here.
A lot of pictures
loaded
of them, yeah. A lot of pictures of them.
And, you know, now they're knocked back to the point you really don't want to get into the lake to do it. But anyway, boys and girls, I know we get around the subjects that are a little weird. Next week, we're going to go back to a little more in-depth on each fish and a little more other stuff. But just been kind of getting reacquainted with the show, having some fun and doing some memories. And I'll be back on the water at least once a week after this, so you're going to get a lot more real updates, real-time updates. And RJ hopefully going along every once in a while.
I'm on the way, boys. I'm on the way. I want a cobia.
Cobia, you and the wife.
Yeah.
I got to take you guys out and get your cobia.
I said fish, 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 fish. Just to ease my mind.